Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome into Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albracht, Paul Savage in for Tommy today. It's a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday. And what do you know? The sun came up today. Everybody can be nice to each other. We can be civil. We can get back to, you know, the things that we do each and every day. And election day always makes you feel a certain way in this country. But we're glad that we have the privilege to be able to do it. Coverage going well into the night. I'm sure that a lot of people are tired this morning. I am tired this morning as I was working elections last night for 12 News. And then, of course, got home and, you know, watch the national coverage the rest of the way. But it's through. It's over. So for, I know a lot of people, that's the biggest celebration today is that it's over.
Right.
And soon enough, we can all move on. But we're happy to be here with you. We appreciate you being with us each and every way that you take in the show. You can listen to us, of course, right here on KFH. You can watch the video stream on Facebook, on YouTube, and on X, all the different ways to take in the show. You can call in right now. It is a busy day of guests, but you do have the IHOP hotline open for you the first half hour of the show here, where you can celebrate the weekday's new IHOP house faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. That number, of course, is 869-1240. Appreciate you being here. Happy Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday, Paul. How are you this morning?
Well, I'm good. I'm kind of like you. I'm a little tired, and I gave up a poker game just to kind of watch what went on last night. I thought,
You did what?
Well, I gave up a poker game, and I said, you know something? I mean, as much as I love to play poker, you know, and gamble a little bit, you know, I just said, you know something? This is kind of like a historical moment, and I said, I just kind of want to see how this unfolds. You know, the last couple elections, I haven't really paid as much attention as I should. You know, then you talk about stealing the vote and all this other stuff, and I said, well, I don't know. I didn't witness it. I didn't see how it happened. I didn't see how it went down. So I said, well, I'm going to watch tonight and just see what happens. And it's obvious America spoke. And you know something? When they speak with one voice, you just got to listen. So, you know, that's the way it works.
Can we all just be nice? It's always about half feel one thing and about half feel the other.
I know.
And, you know, like I miss the days when you just kind of, you know, you voted and you didn't have to talk about it every waking second of every day.
Right.
Yeah. You know, my kids are like, you know, and it's fun for them because it's the first time they've had one of these. They're young enough and they're like, oh, who'd you vote for? And I said, kids, we don't talk about that. Like, we're not. And they're like, why? I'm like, there was a time where, you know, there was a generation or two ago where, you know, like you talk about that stuff, you might get punched in the mouth. Like, just everybody just be nice to each other.
Right. There's a reason when you're making your picks, there's these little walls on the side so nobody can see.
That's right. We're all rowing in the same direction one way or the other. Yeah, so I always do feel patriotic around the event because I think it's important that we care and it's important that we have the ability to do this. And it's important that people have, you know, the freedom to change their minds and do all these things. And then, you know, that's pretty much. And then I'm like, okay, but let's get through it because it's the months leading up to it. And, you know, probably just the weeks after it let's move on and actually, you know, see the government try and do its work and do the things that it's supposed to do. But we're through it.
Yep. Can I ask one question real quick before we get off? There's people that I know who are having, I mean, their families are literally torn up by all this stuff. I had a cousin who is just nuts going one direction on this whole thing. And, I don't know why, but I mean, it. Families are literally mad at each other.
I think it happened less this time. I think it probably did.
I really do think it did. But, you know, there's still some of that. I mean, there's still some of that stuff going on. And I'm just telling you here right now, there's nothing like your family. You're only going to have X amount of family. And if you let something like this come between you and your family, shame on you. So I guess the only word, and Jacob, I'm going to speak on your behalf. I never do, but I'm going to speak on your behalf because I know you would believe what I'm about to say, and that is, let it go. Love each other. Love your family. It makes no difference who a family member voted for. Love them. Just
that's right.
This can't come between you and family. Was it okay to speak for you on that?
Yeah, it is. And don't let the, you know, don't let the right. big mouths, you know, try and convince you otherwise.
Yeah.
Like don't even listen to the people that would tell you that kind of thing. Like just put those people in their own lonely little miserable boxes and let them be lonely and miserable. And
go.
The rest of us will all love each other and mm-hmm. move on. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
I have, you know, my people in my family, you want to talk about ends of both ends of the spectrum.
Do you have that in yours too?
I got them both. Yeah,
you,
brothers,
okay.
like close family.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Yeah.
This may surprise you, Paul.
Okay.
But we like to get a little argumentative for sport and for fun, right? But,
yeah,
you know,
I'm
there
stunned.
Was there
I'm
was
stunned.
A time where that got a little dicey. And the pandemic, I think, had something to
yeah.
do with that.
Oh,
and that,
sure
that
it did.
Sort of
no
energy
question. No question.
Being in the rearview mirror is a happy. I don't think it did not feel that way to me this time. And I'm thankful for that. And I'm hoping that everybody can just, you know, now be nice to each other. And mm-hmm. we'll see if we can't. Be the best country in the world that we always have been and always will be.
That's
so,
right.
You know, Election Day, another one in the books. Congratulations to half of you, and I'm sorry for the other half of you, I guess is the best I can say, but we'll all be just fine.
Fair
so
enough.
It's interesting. K-State, I'm a little surprised they did this. I'm surprised we had games last night, but K-State opens on election night against New Orleans, Paul, and they looked fantastic. So mm-hmm. we're going to get into the K-State game last night at home. They handled their business, which we expected that they would. They handled it in pretty emphatic fashion. So we'll dig into that a little bit. We've got Shreya Salata, our KU insider, coming up at the bottom of this hour. And so we will talk to Shreya about not only the KU opener and not only the KU big game on Friday against North Carolina, but KU football's back in action this week. So we'll talk about that as well. A lot to cover with Shreyas. And then at the top of the second hour, Kevin Saul will join us, Wichita State Athletic Director, for his regular visit on the program. The Shockers opened with a really nice road win. We're coming down the home stretch on the volleyball season, and we're getting ready for a Shocker home opener. And yes, Shocker fans, I will ask Kevin Saul about all the, you know, kerfuffle regarding the cheerleading team that's going on right now. So we'll get into that a little bit as well as we make our way through that. Appreciate Kevin hopping on this week to talk about everything Shockers. So that's all coming up for you on the show today. We got Jad Chambers producing. He's ready for your calls, your video comments. You can leave us voice messages through the Odyssey app. If you're listening to us that way, there's a little microphone. You just push it. You can send us a message. Easy peasy.
Damn.
All right, we're going to come back. Let's get into this K-State game. When we return, a resounding victory over New Orleans. They covered the ridiculous number, and they look pretty good on the way. We'll talk about it next on Sports Daily. Welcome back in, everybody. Crestview Country Club, fall at the club. You can still golf. I'm going to try and get out on Friday and golf. Beautiful day for it today. Of course, the tennis court's still rocking and rolling, but it's the holidays at the club that Crestview wants you to know about. Brunch experiences. So you can go to the club Thanksgiving. They have brunch, or they have meals you can take home and finish cooking to have at the house. I can tell you that for the last 3 years, since my family's been out there, we have utilized this. We don't have extended family in the area. It's the busiest week of the year at the HTO stores, and I almost always work Thanksgiving on TV. So it has been very nice for people like us, and I know there are a lot of you out there, to be able to turn to that, have some sense of community. So it never slows down at Crestview. And you know, there are memberships where you just take part in the social parts of those things. If you're not a golfer or whatever, give them a call. Tell them we sent you. Ask them about all the different ways you can be a part of it. We appreciate their support of us here on Sports Daily. Paul, K-State opens the season last night, and they open with a bang. They get a big win over New Orleans, 89-65. Not surprising. They cover the number. I don't know what that means this time of year, but they look good on their way to do it. I think the most interesting statistic is single-digit turnovers. They accomplished that with a whole lot of points scored and a pace that makes you feel really good. David Gasson had an incredible game. Well, maybe his best game as a Wildcat. 21 points, 15 rebounds. Coach Tang said after the game that he paid attention to the scouting report because that was, you know, just matchup-wise something that they wanted to do. Coleman Hawkins, of course, the biggest name coming in through the transfer portal, did not have a great scoring night, but was able to still pour in 9 rebounds, 5 assists, and a block and a steal. So he kind of filled it up a little bit. And then the thing I've told people to watch for is Brendan Housen. Another 9 three-point shots attempted, shot better than 40% from 3. Clearly something K-State wants to feature is his shooting. Now, we've seen that through the exhibition in this first game. Max Jones also made 4 threes. He only shot 5 of them. So a really nice performance, by the way, from Max Jones, the senior transfer, 19 points. But it was, you know, Paul, I think between the turnovers and the fact that you had upperclassmen leading the way for K-State, when it's all these new players, we don't really think of that. But this is a really experienced basketball team. And I, you know, if you're trying to draw one up for an opening game against New Orleans, that was as much as you want to see from K-State, I think.
Well, you shoot the three pretty well as a team. You shoot the basketball, you know, pretty well. I mean, you're playing good defense. I mean, this wasn't really a great test. This isn't what we would call, you know, a quality team when you start sure. thinking about having the, you know, 5 of the top 10 teams in America, right, as we speak, are in the Big 12. I mean, that's the way this works. So you got what you wanted out of this. You got what you knew. It wasn't going to be a huge test. This was going to be one of those games where you get some kids in, you let them play, you see how things work, and things looked good. Things looked like this is going to be probably – Do I say, Jacob, maybe a little bit of an improved team? Right now, I think after one game, I think this
question.
There's no question.
No
question. The question is how much? How big will this improvement be? But it's going to be big enough to take the Kansas State Wildcats and bring them into national prominence. I think it will. We saw that last night. So, you know, you just got to think to yourself, this was a good warm-up. I don't want to get too excited yet. We've got a couple other games down the road in the next month or so that we'll certainly learn a lot more about. LSU, for instance, is one of the games I think about. I think George Washington will be an interesting. They got a good tournament going on.
You know, I don't even know. Like that's the thing. It's so hard now. It's always hard early in a year. It is so hard with the transfer portal for me get a gauge of what to expect early in the season from the opposition, mm-hmm. right? Like we can follow along with Wichita State and KU and K-State and what they're doing in the portal and take guesses. Man, I don't know what LSU has. I don't know what George Washington has. That's what it gets really hard in the early part of a college basketball season now to just sort of have a good grasp of what everybody else is doing. It's hard enough to keep up with what the team, you know, what the teams followed her. So for me, when I look at these things, it's the things within a game. Mm-hmm. We know that K-State, it doesn't matter who K-State plays right now, mm-hmm. right? Because they have the 12 schedule. It's irrelevant. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd like to see them get tested. I'm sure they would like to get tested, but they're not going to play the kind of non-conference schedule that Kansas is going to play. Mm-hmm. And what do we take from it? I think stylistically, we take what we can, and what we can take is that, you know, they shot a high percentage. It was against a team that, you know, is not going to challenge them defensively the way that a lot of Big 12 teams are going to challenge them. I think, you know, we look at David Castillo, Paul, took 8 shots in 11 minutes. Okay, the talented freshman out of Sunrise. 8 shots in 11 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, one of them. Right? It's gonna be him. And now 6 of those were threes. K-State took 34 threes in this game.
That's right.
That is something we're seeing now through an exhibition in this that I would be willing to guess at this early juncture that will be a big part of what K-State does this year. Mm-hmm. I think shoot a lot of threes. I think they can. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been talking about that. And to me, Housen was the most obvious. Like he's going to get up a lot of 3-point shots in each and every game, a lot of them. And he's the caliber of shooter where what we saw last night, I think is pretty reasonable expectation, a little over 40% on a lot of taken threes. And that's what they want. Mm-hmm. That's what they want to see. you know, is Max Jones that kind of shooter regularly?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get to see him in the exhibition game. But, you know, you had a lot of guys taking a lot of threes. And so that, I think, is we don't know a lot of what to take from these early games is something we can take from K-State.
Right.
K-State looks like they're going to be a team that shoots a ton of three-point shots.
It does look like that. And what it also looks like is that they might be pretty good at it. So we'll see how that works. And, totally. And the only reason I bring up LSU and even George Washington to a lesser extent is we all know that LSU is going to have some NIL money. I mean, they're going to have some good players. But it's just like, you know, this is a conversation we had 2.5 months ago when college football started. Jacob, do you remember? Says, well, how good Alabama's going to be? Oh, I'm not real sure. We got to study the portal and see who's coming back. And, you know, if you remember, there was a day on this show we would talk about LSU has 3 seniors returning and 2 juniors returning and a sophomore got a lot of playing time last year. And you know, we'd break it down like that. Now you go, well, who's on this team? Well, we don't know. Will they gel? Well, we don't know. What presence will the newcomers have? Well, we don't. There's so many questions that we don't know. Just like football, because we now have that feeling, just like football, with who's who, what's what, who's good, who's not, who's a pretender. Is Indiana a pretender? Maybe they are, maybe they're not. We'll see in the next few games. But we have an idea now. The same thing will happen in basketball. We don't have an idea who's good. I know this. I think Gonzaga's good. I think Gonzaga's pretty darn good. And I think they're going to be a contender for the national championship, if I can go out on a limb and say that, after the thumping they gave Baylor, what was it, 2 nights ago? Yeah, it was 2 nights ago. And so anyway, and I watched some of that, and it was hard to watch because they are good. They are ball hawks. They shoot the ball. They defend. They do everything. And I watched a good chunk of that game. So anyway, we don't know that much about K-State. I guarantee you, in the next 30 days, we're going to know a lot more about this team because there's new guys, but everybody's got new guys, Jacob. It's hard to tell who's what.
That's what I mean. It's, you know, everybody's playing with all these new players. But we've seen David Gasson for a while. He's about the only holdover here for K-State.
I know.
And he looked really good. His best game as a Wildcat. That's interesting. I've always liked him as a player, you know, as a talent and all these things. Maybe it does click for him this year. I don't think he's going to lead the way offensively for the Wildcats most nights, but that's great if he does, because if everybody else is going to take a ton of threes and he can give you the steady offense down low, I mean, 21-15, I don't care who you are. That's a good night,
right?
That's a good performance. But I think if you ask the coaching staff, and I read through some of the, you know, the post-game notes and all that, we were obviously paying attention to an election and all these other things last night. They're very happy. Jerome Tang was very happy that they kept, I think he said something to the effect of, I don't even know when the last time we had single-digit turnovers. You know, if you've got 24 assists to 9 turnovers, you'll take that. If you've got, you know, 89 points scored and only 9 turnovers involved in that, you almost had as many steals as you had turnovers. You certainly had more takeaways than turnovers. They had 4 blocks and 7 steals. Like, those are the things, as coaches, I think that, you know, that they're going to be happy about, that we can sort of pay attention to, knowing that the level of defense they faced isn't up to snuff with what they'll see in the conference. But for me, I think stylistically, that's what we begin to look at, right?
Right.
And stylistically, it looks like the identity of the team will change a little bit. They're going to shoot it a ton. They're going to shoot it from the outside a ton. And I think it's a good fit for that. This is what I've always said about this particular group. When it comes to K-State, as they were putting this class together and Tang was, it's always felt to me like all the pieces fit really well together. From the outright, you bring in a guy like Hawkins, you know, he can help with Gaston. You've got some size. You can clean up. You're there for rebounds. You're there for second chance opportunities, so that when you take a ton of threes, which is what it's looked like they're going to do through recruiting and how they recruited, like, it all fits and makes sense. That's why I'm bullish on them. That's why I think they'll exceed expectations. That's why I think they'll be back in the NCAA tournament and be a top half Big 12 team this year. So all signs are good right now. They played New Orleans at home. Like,
right.
You know, so, well, take what you will from it.
Right.
But it certainly could have been worse. And, you know, it's we're trending in the right direction. We'll talk to Wyatt Thompson about it in our weekly visit next week. I know we've been focused so much on football, but we'll talk to him about the basketball team and what he thought of the opener as we get into it. We'll talk to Tim Fitzgerald about it tomorrow, our K-State insider. So plenty more to come on that. Speaking of insiders, let's get our KU insider in next, Paul.
Yeah, let's do KU.
Mm-hmm. They had a basketball opener. They've got a big one coming up on Friday, and the football team's back in action. We're going to touch on it all. Sri Islada joins us next. It's all Brockton Savage at Sports Daily. Don't go anywhere. Mornings at KFH, we enjoy a great cup of coffee from Prairie Fire Coffee. I know Mr. Savage has his in hand as we speak. Always appreciate them keeping us fueled up, not only at KFH, but the entire Odyssey family of stations, by the way. We talked to K-State. You've got K-State Wildcat Football Talk Show tonight, the Chris Kleiman Coaches Show. That is tonight. Should be an interesting one after the loss to Houston. That'll be at 7 o'clock. Right here on KFH. It follows the Chiefs Kingdom show at 6 o'clock. You can also catch all of that on the Odyssey app. As we get you ready for a weekly visit with our KU insider, Sri Islada here, it is a busy time. We welcome in Shrius. And, you know, Shrius, as you get settled there, we'll just sort of open things up. We've got a busy time of the year. Do you feel like, Shrius, that we have transitioned to basketball season now, the way the football season's gone? So we have the opener, and we got a North Carolina game on Friday. What do you think people are more fired up about? KU North Carolina on Friday or in basketball, or KU hosting Iowa State on Saturday in football?
Is that even a question? Come on. It's basketball season. It's basketball season. This KU team make a bowl game. It's basketball season. No one cares. It is.
Well, listen. KU, so here's what's interesting to me about KU football the rest of the way. They can play. I mean, you want to talk about the opportunity to play spoiler here. Iowa State, BYU, Colorado, they can be a thorn in the side of the Big 12. Like, K-State fans right now ought to be the biggest KU fans the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Because KU can help them a great deal. Most notably, when we look at the Big 12 standings, if they can beat Colorado. Because K-State can still control it with Iowa State. BYU, they're kind of toast unless BYU absolutely falls apart. It's Colorado all of a sudden that they need to lose again. Here's KU for Colorado. You know, that's so I think there's still some meat on the bone there. It's kind of, but you got to kind of be, you just want KU to kind of be the jerks of the league, I think, if you're a Jayhawk fan right now, and ruin everybody's holidays.
I mean, I think that's, you know, that's a sentiment I see on Twitter, right? Kansas State fans are turning into KU fans for a little bit, like, because they know their season hinges on a little bit of KU magic. And I think it's going to be a really interesting matchup against Iowa State. You know, we know historically the Cyclone fans are the biggest, I think, road-traveled fans of the Big 12.
Oh, yeah.
And in this matchup where they're right next to Kansas and the fact that they are going to be playing Arrowhead, I really think it's going to be fascinating to see how many people show up, because this could probably be the most populated KU game or really fan-filled KU game in Arrowhead, I think, all year. If Kansas pulls off this upset, obviously, you know, Iowa State lost to Texas Tech, so they lost a little bit of luster there. But if Kansas pulls off the upset against a good Iowa State team, I think that's a really good indication of maybe there is some signs of hope for the rest of the season.
Right.
I just, you know, me, it's hard to see them going 4-0 the rest of the way. They haven't beaten Baylor at Waco, by the way, which ends their season, ever. They're 0-10 all time. So historically, it trends-wise, it's not a great end of the season look for KU football. But, you know, I really think if this is a turnaround of the season, it starts Saturday and it starts with a definitive win against the Cyclones on Saturday. If KU football wants eyeballs on the rest of the season, it starts by winning on Saturday.
You know, Tarius, I love you to death. You know, I really enjoy every time we get you on. I really do. I'm one of your big fans. I want you to know that. But you're a week too soon on the way you're playing this out. Well, oh my gosh, it's basketball because, you know, nobody cares about football. Well, let me tell you this. You know what Coach Leipold's saying in the locker room right now to this team? Here's what he's saying. You guys want to be legends? You guys want to be remembered forever? You guys want to make a mark on college football? You go out and you beat Iowa State. You beat BYU. You beat Colorado. You beat Baylor. You're capable of doing it. And you beat them. You go to a bowl. You become a legend because everybody said it can't be done. Now, if they go out and get blown out by Iowa State, I'm buying what you're selling. I am buying, buy. But I'm not buying it right now, Sharias. Not yet. No, there's still four games. You lose to Iowa State, I'm with you, buddy. But, man, I'll tell you what. There's a chance for this team to be a legend. Jacob, you like legends, don't you?
I do. I like Paul's coach speak, too. But it's I think there's something to it. But it has to start now. Like these, you know, another close loss doesn't matter anymore. And I guess then it becomes, wait, look, we saw Iowa State last week. I love Tech in that game. I'll sit here today and I would tell you that I absolutely think that KU's best game can beat Iowa State. I don't think there's any question about that. They're at home. It's a 2.5 point spread, people. 2.5 points. That's it. KU on their best day can beat Iowa State. Is that not enough? Do you think they can, Trias?
I definitely think they can. You know, my optimism doesn't extend past this week, though. I don't think the, you know.
That's right.
I came into the season think they'd win 11 games.
Right.
And the other side of it, where I think they're not going to win four games in a row. I just don't see it. Maybe they will, but they haven't put together three straight games where they've looked like a good team. And they have games. They lose in the same fashion every single time. We've had this conversation how many times? Yep. Kansas was in a position to win. Then they came to the fourth quarter. They blew a lead, and they lost in the last 2 minutes of the game. How many times are we going to see it before we say they are what they are? I don't believe in them because they haven't given me anything to show that they should be believed in. Okay? Right now, Kansas' season hinges on beating on Iowa State, a team that is, all accounts of record, a better team than Kansas. Even if more talent than Iowa State does. It doesn't matter because it hasn't showcased itself all season. They've won, what, one conference game so far this year? One? In the bottom of the conference, everyone thought they'd be a top five team at worst, okay? You know, to me, Kansas's entire ability to turn it around, I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Iowa State. I'd be surprised if they beat Colorado, if they beat Baylor, if they beat BYU. Me, that is the hardest possible thing they can do. They haven't consistently been able to put it together all this year. And you know what's going to end up happening is they're going to have a win against Saturday against Iowa State. KU fans are going to be excited, and they're going to go get blown out against Colorado. That's what's going to end up happening because that's, you know, what the season has been like for Kansas. No consistency week in, week out, and they've come out of bye weeks looking better than what they are, but then they don't hold it for the rest of the way.
Yeah, look, I think we're putting the cart way before the horse. It's become interesting now in the Big 12 standings more than anything else that KU, based on the schedule, is in a position to be this great spoiler of the league. And so we'll watch it, and they play on Saturday. But it is basketball season. I did lead you in on that for a reason because I do think people are fired up. Look, I don't know what to make of Howard. I think that, though, as we look at KU right now, we're seeing what we want to see, right? Like, this is what you want to see. You saw them make half their threes. That was a problem last year. We're seeing that this team, in some form or fashion, is going to have depth. It looks like at every level, with Flory Badunga looking, I think, probably way ahead of schedule. So, you know, it's a game against Howard with a big one looming, but this is looking positive for the number one team in the country.
You know, I think that's a great point you made about the threes thing. I think for me, in these early season games, I don't really care too much about the result. Obviously matters. But trends are a better indicator of what Kansas basketball could be or cannot be. Last year, we knew from game one that they were going to struggle with shooting threes because they went, what, 6 of 29 or something? Exhibition game. Then they didn't hit threes, I think, in most of non-con play besides a select few games. To me, this Kansas team on paper and in actuality, I think it is a good amount better than last year.
Yeah,
I don't know how much that means in the sense of winning the Big 12 conference because it's too far and too early to think about. But I think, you know, you go into this Friday game against UNC, a team that struggled against Elon. You know, you come out there with a commanding victory. If you're a Kansas fan, you feel good. You feel good because it's a good start to the season and you're doing exactly what you need to do. But more importantly, there are certain trends that I think Kansas can showcase to me that gives them long-term confidence. It's about shooting threes, making threes, attempting threes. Those three things, if they do that, you know, that is a long-term indicator of their tournament success. Bill Self teams, historically, the ones that have won, have got to shoot more threes. They have done it in the years they've won. And the, even like the year that, you know, 2022, I believe it was, they still were, I think, top, you know, 200 in three-point attempts. The last few years, you know, they haven't been top 300. Last year, I think they were near the, like, late 200s. So that's a great indicator in college basketball of long-term success is can you attempt and make enough threes to win games? And I think this UNC team is a, you know, a team that's beatable. They have three really good guards, some of the best in the nation. But I think, you know, Kansas can go out there and really assert their dominance with Hunter Dickinson getting back to his, I think, usual self, back from injury. And like you said, Lori looks good. I think it's going to be a really good test against UNC. I think they don't have a – I wrote a story about it today, but, you know, Bill remains cautiously optimistic about Flory. I asked him, you know, if you think that the, you know, hook shot he showcased and that kind of post-spin move he did against Howard, is it good? And he's like, that's great confidence-boosting plays, but they don't really mean anything. And I kind of agree with that sentiment because Howard doesn't really mean anything. No disrespect whatsoever to Howard.
Sure.
But it's like they haven't played anybody and they don't have anybody to match up with Flory. But I think the archetype that Flory Badunga is very exciting. A rim-running, rim-protecting big man that Kansas has lacked, I think, for a long, long time.
All right, Shreyas, I'm going to make you put on your your projection hat. And
yeah.
9 out of the next 11 games, all right, it's like a killer's list. It's North Carolina, Michigan State, Duke, Creighton, Missouri, North Carolina State before you get into the Big 12 play. That's a heck of a run right there. That's a really tough schedule. How many games do you predict KU? And by the way, because I think these are important games to get KU where it needs to be, particularly in the days of the portal nowadays, you know, to get kids where they're playing with each other. Everybody's got somebody new. But 9 out of the next 11 games, those are tough games. Where will KU be? Where does KU need to be, more importantly, wins and losses out of those 9 really good basketball teams that they'll be facing?
Ideally, you come out of that stretch with 2 losses, or
two.
I think.
2, okay.
You know, looking at probably a loss between, you know, Duke, UNC, and Michigan State. One of those. I guess they'll lose one of those, you know, if I was a betting man. And then you might have another loss just kind of because you don't fall or something happens or injuries or whatever. But I think, you know, they should, you know, on paper, be the favorite in most of these games, if not all of them. I think the only game that I'd be curious to see if they're a favorite or not is Duke. And I guess that depends on how they look the rest of the year. I mean, up to that point when they play in Vegas. But, I really do think they should come out of this stretch with less than 2 losses if they are what everyone thinks they are.
I want to go back to 3. Shreyas Lada joining us, KC Star, beat reporter for KU football and basketball. We're talking hoops. I want to go back to the 3s for a second. They took 22. Most of those are coming from Zeke Mayo, to be expected. He took 8 of them. Rylan Griffin took 4 of them. Coit took 3. So it's really kind of Mayo taking the lead on that. I'm curious to know what Bill Self wants. Last night, K-State played. We've seen now K-State shoot a ton of them, and we've seen Jerome Tang basically be perfectly happy with them shooting a ton of them. Where do you think Bill Self wants the 3-point shot with this group? Zeke, Mayo, and the rest? Like, does he want others shooting a lot of threes? What's the number that they're going to be comfortable with, do you think?
Well, I think Diggy needs to take more threes. I think, you know, he only took three, I want to say.
Yeah, I think it was two or three, yeah.
Three. He needs to take more threes. You're hoping Ryland is a better three-point shooter than he showcased on Monday night, which he is. We've seen it in his stats in his 2 years at Alabama. I think he's taking eight threes is modern basketball. You need him to do it. You need it. It's perfect. I think Bill said it. You know, they have a team where they hope they can shoot 40% from three or as near close to it. And I think that's really in the realm of possibility with this Kansas team. I guess you're hoping for guys like AJ Storr to figure out their shooting. DeJuan Harris to take open threes when needed. Obviously, Jamari McDowell's redshirting this year, so he doesn't really factor in the equation. But, you know, just these couple of guys, I think there is a surplus of threes that they can still make, right? Like, we're going to expect Hunter to probably make a three a game this coming year. We're probably expecting AJ to kind of hit a three a game, maybe a three and a half a game. It's going to be interesting to see how the numbers look as we get closer and closer to conference play. And obviously, you know, I don't think the way they're defended by UNC is going to be any close to the way they're defended by Howard. So the threes won't come as easily. But Zeke Mayo was taking a lot of threes in rhythm with people on him and draining them. I think he's going to be such a tremendous kind of addition to the squad. And Diggy, you know, as much as he'll play, I think he's going to have to just come out there and go bombs away. You want a guy who can come off the bench and go bombs away. And they have two guys who can do that, I think, this year.
Talk a little about playing the paint, if you don't mind. I mean, this was a game last night. It's hard to put a figure on, you know Howard University and the difficulty within that particular game, and particularly within the paint, but seven blocks by the University of Kansas, out-rebounding Howard by eight. Talk a little about play in the paint. How important is that going to be to the University of Kansas, and what do you foresee? Who's going to be that one guy? Is it going to be Hunter Dickinson? Who's going to be the one guy that makes the difference in the paint?
Well, I think it's Hunter and Flory. Honestly, Flory is a tremendous rim protector. Ryland Griffin told me at media day that he's probably the best rim protector he's played with. He compared him to some of his Alabama teammates who were on that Final Four team, I think, that made that run. And I think that's meant, you know, as he gets better, as Flory gets better at playing college basketball, and, you know, he did a great job of not fouling the 17 minutes he played, but I think he's going to get better and better on the defensive end as he gets more comfortable. And the offensive end, you know, it's a clear-cut thing. Kansas playing with pace is going to lead to easy paint points, and that's where they have a massive advantage in guys like KJ Adam and Flory Badunga, because they are going to end up getting a lot of easy dunks by just running up and down the floor. I think that's the way this Kansas team needs to play, is with pace, with franticness. You can't play at a slow enough pace. Like, because if you look at it, Hunter's probably the only person that shouldn't be running up and down the court with a ferocity. That lineup is built for playing run and gun basketball. And, you know, I think it's going to lead them to be a better team on the offensive end by running up and down the court. And I think it's something that Zeke Mayo alluded to, that they want to play in transition because they have such a massive advantage there. Teams don't have a KJ Adams. Teams don't have a DeJuan Harris or, you know, Zeke Mayo. Guys who are really good in transition and can end up changing and flipping games all the way around because of their ability to transition and get paint points. Like, that paint point advantage was 2-1, 40-20 against Howard. Obviously, Howard is not a team that really matters in the long grand scheme of things, but it's a positive trend that if you're a Kansas fan, you hope to see as much as a 10-15 point advantage in the paint for them to win games.
Now, Shreyas has an article right now up just in the last hour on Flory Badunga, his role there. You can go to the KC Star, check that out. Follow Shreyas on X as well, at SHRE98. Enjoy it. It is a fun time of year. The crossover is fun. It's not football like we thought, but it is an enjoyable time of the year to get both college football and college basketball.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
There goes Shreyas Lotta, our KU insider. You can go back and watch and listen to his full interview on the Odyssey app, as you always can. So coming up in hour number two, we'll reset here a little bit. I want to get to the NFL trade deadline. One move made that the Chiefs were in on, they didn't get done. I think of absolute interest in the things that are happening across the league. So we'll talk about the NFL trade deadline, how many teams got a lot better in that trade deadline. Coming up top of next hour, Kevin Saul joins us for his regular visit here on Sports Daily. A lot to get to with Wichita State Athletic Director. We'll have that for you as we make our way to it. Let's do our HTO giveaway here on the way out of hour number one. It's a text to win contest, and you can get involved. You can win some free iced tea, 25 plus flavors of sweet and unsweet iced tea, including the all new peach cobbler. The seasonal flavor is back for tea. And then on the coffee side, featuring free rain coffee, you can get your iced and hot favorites. You can get one of each of these, and that features the new peppermint mocha, Paul, iced or hot. Whoa. It's very popular right now. If you're into getting festive a little early, you can check that out. All you got to do to win a tea and a coffee is text the keyword TTEA to the short code 20357. T20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. We're coming right back. Kevin Saul joins the program next on Sports Daily.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, Shocker fans, want the latest on Wichita State Athletics? Let's go right to the source with Shocker AD Kevin Saul.
And welcome back in hour number two here on Sports Daily, everybody. Glad to be with you on a Wednesday. Hope everybody survived the long night of Election Day. Hope everybody realizes the sun came up and we can all enjoy our lives just the same, and that includes Shocker Athletics. We are into basketball season, and we are happy to have Kevin Saul with us, Wichita State Athletic Director. It's been a few weeks here, Kevin. I know you're not feeling the best, so we do appreciate you making some time for us here today.
Oh, not at all. I appreciate the opportunity to be on, guys. Just, you know, it's going around. You get the transition from one season to the next, and we got a long season ahead of us. Got home late the other night. I think our heads hit the pillow around 2 a.m. after a really nice Western Kentucky win, and got to take care of your bodies for sure.
Yeah, I've been coughing for 3 weeks. Let's start with that game at Western Kentucky. I love the challenge of the game. I love that it was scheduled that way. I love that you get them early in the season to really get a test. And look, I don't know all the takeaways from a 91-84 win like that, but you'll take it, right? I mean, we don't know how many quality games in the non-con are going to be there. This might very well be one of them. I got to imagine those coaches and you guys are just thrilled to have that road win right out of the gates.
Yeah, I think the net split on a road quad two is a 125, if I'm not mistaken. So it stands to reason that could serve, which is a quality win for us. You know, it was a series that we put together shortly after my arrival here at Wichita State, and I've known Todd Stewart, the AD at Western, for a while. And so we put it together, but we left the dates somewhat open because that flexibility is helpful as the staffs try and work through dates. And Paul said it many times. He wanted an early, firm road test, and it was just that. The place was darn near sold out. They were celebrating their Conference USA championship from last year, their league champ, and doing the ring ceremony. And the place was really lathered up and excited. It was a great environment. And I thought our guys responded really, really well. So anytime you can win and learn and do it on the road, I think there's some great lessons to take back.
And in that, the big thing that jumps out to me is a team that won two games on the road last year. It was obviously a problem. That has to be, because we got a lot of these players are the same. Now, the lead man there was not, with his 31 points and all the greatness that came from Justin Hill in that game. But that's a team that struggled in that area. In all the years you've spent with these college athletes, how much do you think just getting that monkey off their backs to all these returning players to open that way, that feels meaningful?
Yes, it does. And, you know, there's an element of you walking into a game like that and you walk into the arena that night, holy smokes, this is a really firm season opening game. And I commend Paul for doing it. It really a unique approach to want to learn what we have very early so that you can make adjustments. I don't think our first road game last year was for till late November, early December, true road game. So anyway, at the end of the day, it's a great lesson. We learned a lot. As we know, guys, we've got an older team. We've got a lot returning, five of the top seven scorers from last year. We lost three to the portal, and the average team in our league lost eight. So I think that continuity will play out really well over the course of the season. You're going to see different players step up and do different things. I called Corey Torgerson right after the game, and I said, hey, listen, buddy, I really appreciate all the work and time and effort that you put into Monte's reinstatement process, because when Quincy Ballard got two fouls early on, we go to. And those are the things that our administrative staff work tirelessly, and to connect their efforts to winning in a moment like that is really, really important. So just appreciative for everybody and what they're doing.
You know, Kevin, I've got to hand it to you, because this is the first time since 1992 that Wichita State's gone on the road for an opening game in men's basketball. That's really gutsy, because most teams are state, you know, those that are the ones that will end up possibly playing in the NCAA tournament. They're all playing at home, playing somebody that's pretty sure it's going to be a win. But you go on the road. I've got to ask, how was the sausage made on this particular decision to go on the road? Was there a reason? Is there a method to the madness? Because that's gutsy to go on the road and play a Western Kentucky that is really a good basketball team, but you'd make that decision. Let's go on the road. What? And it worked out, by the way, perfect, and that will pay dividends. What went into the decision-making on that?
It's like, Paul, you they're with you win or tie. If it doesn't work out well, it's a really dumb decision. But at the end of the day, when I arrived in Wichita in July of 22, to give you the true backstory, I spent 3.5 years at Murray State, as you guys know. That's where I came from prior to being here. And Murray State and Western Kentucky were huge, huge rivals way back in the day when they were both in the OVC. And it was the closest geographic rival. And we had actually spun up a series with Western because it was a good series and it was close. We did that at Murray, and we hadn't played them in like 18 years or 20 years. So it was going to be a great one for our fan base. And then had the last opportunity to come to Wichita. And I called Todd for some reason other than a basketball game. And I said, hey, Todd, what do you want to appear with us? And he said, yeah, let's do it. And so we did one the first one game. This was last year at our place. As you guys remember, we got the win there. And then the second one was this year at their place. We left and ended the day. That certainly is helpful to the staff. When you got ADs locking in dates, it kind of hamstrings the staff. And so we knew we were going to be at their place this year. And Paul was really pushing to get that early in the schedule. And it just happened to be the first regular season game.
We got a home game coming up here this weekend. It is the home opener, Montana State. And I'll ask you this, and we'll get into the other sports. I know it's been a tumultuous week, probably for your staff, this cheerleading story. Now, forgive me, because I've been out of town. I don't know how much publicly you've talked about some of the blowback from some premium seating. So I'll just take it all the way back and start at the beginning. What is the change that's happening at basketball games with where these seats are and how it will impact what fans are used to seeing or normally going to see from cheer and dance on a game day?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that. And I'll start with change is hard. And we approached this subject back in April and May after last season and shared with our dance leadership that this was something that we were going to take a look at. And we were going to offer it up as an opportunity to sell some premium seats on the floor. As you guys know, there are decisions of the head and there are decisions of the heart. And sometimes those two can conflict. Our responsibility is to generate revenue to match championship level expectations in 16 of our varsity sports. And I think it becomes a difficult conversation. Because in no way does it diminish the importance of what we're doing. But spirit squads, which are defined as bands, cheer, dance, majorettes, it's not necessarily the primary mission of athletics. And I would share the reasoning why is that the NCAA doesn't classify them as intercollegiate athletic sports. And when you get into the 16 intercollegiate athletic sports that we do have, we are responsible for APR, graduate success rate, medical components. There's a whole litany of expectations that cost a lot of money to meet and exceed from the NCAA's perspective for those 16 varsity sports. So we simply don't have that with cheer and dance. Now, what I will share with you is I think there's been some miscommunication, and that's clearly the case when you get something that spins up on social media. There's a lot of third-party information that gets exchanged. But at the end of the day, what has changed, Jacob, is we have shifted from two corners of the floor that are dedicated to dance to one corner of the floor that's dedicated to, and we've installed two new premium seating areas in the northwest and the southeast corner of the floor. Have the opportunity to create a new revenue stream of about $220,000 for our programs. Ironically, we spend about $220,000 on Spirit every year, and we've done some research that I think is really, really critical in terms of understanding what that support looks like on our campus. Athletics is the only entity that supports the Spirit groups on campus, right? Provides financial resources for the Spirit groups on campus. And when you take the 5-year average number of what we're applicating to cheer, dance, band, majorettes program, those types of things, it's about $220,000 a year, which is significant. When we first got here in July of 22, I met with all head coaches, met with the leadership of cheer and dance as well, because I wanted to understand where they were in their journey. And they were displeased with funding. They were displeased that their game day locker room had been taken from them. There was a lot of displeasure. And we immediately reinstituted the locker room. We increased from FY22 to FY23. We increased athletic department support for Spirit groups by 61%, which is just unheard of. So they certainly are important, but there's been a lot of extreme responses to what we've done, and it's not abnormal what we've done in intercollegiate athletics. I will share with you that Virginia Commonwealth and College of Charleston, who are Division I AAA peers without football revenue, they don't have their cheer and dance on the floor, period. They're off in the student section. They're on the stands. At the end of the day, we've allocated one corner of the floor, which is pretty typical. In most college basketball environments, you're going to get one corner of the floor for Spirit, and there's going to be some component that interacts with the student section or is in an end zone behind the basket. And so we're not abnormal in that. It's just a change for Wichita State. And certainly, my heart is certainly with the folks that are disappointed with that, and I can empathize with disappointment and even disagreement with the decision. In some cases, it has gotten very personal, and that certainly is not where we want to be with that. But at the end of the day, we're going to try and make right decisions for all 16 of our intercollegiate athletic varsity sports.
Yeah, and look, we appreciate your candid nature in this, and I want to work through it because I do think there are two pretty clear, important things happening in the changing landscape of college athletics. So if I understood what you said there, there was how much of an appetite for the premium seats has there been? And when you say $220,000 has been raised through a revenue stream, are those tickets sold already? Like that's what it's already generated to offer that seating?
Yeah, that's the max capacity of those seats. I think we've sold all but two or three on the southeast corner and maybe all but five or six on the northwest. I'd have to check, guys, I'd have to check our ticketing manifest. But we've got some folks that are interested in the remainder of those seats for this season as well. So we're continuing to have those conversations. At the end of the day, guys, trying to walk this really fine line because, as we know, college athletics is changing. In April, the House settlement is going to be ratified, if you will, signed, approved. which will lead to about $650,000 a year in retroactive NIL payments. It will lead to approximately $3 million in terms of roster maximums and scholarships associated with that, and another $3 million in revenue share, which is basically replacing the nonprofit perspective. So we've got about $7 million that we're going to need to come up with to remain competitive here in the next 9 to 10 months. And we're going to have to make some incredibly difficult decisions. And certainly not communicating that this is the least of those difficult decisions. But at the end of the day, we've not cut funding. We've not cut the opportunity for our cheer and dance teams to access the floor, pregame, media timeouts, halftime, to have all the access to the floor. The really the only thing that's changed is the location from which they watch the game while the ball's in play and the clock is ticking. And so if that gives us the ability to generate $250,000 in new revenue to fund our programs, we've got 273 student athletes to think about. We've got 16 varsity sports to think about. We've got 100 coaches and staff to think about in addition to the spirit groups. Not in isolation from the spirit groups. And so it's my job to look at things collectively and not necessarily from a very narrow lens.
And then one other point on this, I think, Kevin, that we'll clear up, because I've seen the email back to a fan that included, you know, the KWCH newsroom where I also work. And that's the point of selling food and beverage. And it appears there was miscommunication there. So what exactly is happening with that piece of all of this too?
Yeah, and I think this, Jacob, speaks to the dangers of social media, right? The young people in our cheer and dance programs that have not worked the games have worked in concession stands. And you guys are all familiar with community groups and youth groups working concession stands as nonprofit organizations to make some money for their respective causes and groups. And that certainly has been the case with cheer and dance. Again, the folks that are not performing in game. And so they are compensated to serve fans on the main concourse out of concession stands. And I think that was spun up in a different way to say that they were responsible for serving premium seating on the floor. And that's simply not the case. We have a group called Shaken and Stirred that works in the hospitality room. In the Champions Club, which is our pregame hospitality guys, and we've hired those folks to serve the premium seats on the floor, not cheer and dance.
So you're not telling cheer and dance that they need to serve the premium seats. They can in a fundraising effort, is that correct, if they choose to?
No, they work the concession stands. They work the concession stand number of years up on the main concourse serving fans.
Okay, and that's happened in the past. That's not a new thing.
That's not a new thing. No.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Anything else there that we need to clear up with? And look, olive branch to the people. It sounds like you understand that people are upset, but this is the reality of the evolving college landscape. Is there anything else in this situation that needs to be out there as you've got a microphone here? Like any other miscommunications, anything else you need to say to the people that are really upset by this?
Yeah, I would say that we're certainly not making decisions with the intent to hurt. We are trying to make middle ground, moderate decisions that have all of our student athletes, all of our coaches and staff, and everybody that we serve in mind, because we also have fans that have an expectation that we resource programs to win championships. That's really clear. And if we don't do that, then we will certainly experience the backlash on the backside of that. And so we're the right decisions. I think there is a notion out there that we are not supporting spirit squads, and we sent out some financial information, and there's really four talking points to that. Four out of the last five fiscal years, we've ranked in the top three amongst the peer groups: East Carolina, Florida Atlantic, Memphis, Charlotte, North Texas, South Florida, and UTSA, all with football programs. So if we're ranking in the top three in expenditures and we don't have football expenditures, we are really investing in our spirit groups at a level that's much higher than our peers. Okay, excluding fiscal, when you look at the last 5 years, if you were to average what the spend is for us versus our peers, we spent 51% higher than our average peer in the last 5 years. Our five-year average is $220,000. As I mentioned before, guys, the first year that I got here, we increased their support 61.1%. And so, again, as we want or the participants want, probably, but at the end of the day, we've got to think about 16 intercollegiate athletics programs, 273 student-athletes, and 100 coaches and staff as well. We don't have the luxury of going all in any one particular area of our department. We've got to take a balanced approach.
Kevin Saul, Wichita State Athletic Director, appreciate having this discussion. I know it's been on the minds of a lot of people. Kevin, let's jump back into some of the things happening through the athletic program. So I want to talk volleyball because they're coming down the home stretch and you guys are getting ready to host a conference championship. But before we do that, women's basketball, Terry Nooner, year two, a win in the opener against Oklahoma Christian. I know they've had good teams in past years. Kind of hard for us to judge that. What are you hearing from Coach Nooner? Like how are they feeling so far through an exhibition in one game about, you know, what everybody hopes is a return of Wichita State women's basketball?
Yeah, he likes the depth. He likes the speed, the athleticism of this roster. He's going to be able to go pretty deep, guys. I think first game, obviously a little concerned over the turnovers, the free throw shooting. But again, this is a club that has shown the ability to grow summer and in their Virgin Islands foreign tour experience and all those things. So it's early. Oklahoma Christian, I thought, was a good club. I mean, they were hitting pretty well in terms of shots from the field and those sort of things. But at the end of the day, I came away with a 14-point win. I think we had 30 empty possessions between missed three-pointers and turnovers. So if you convert those at a 44% clip like we did the rest of the game, you know, ifs and buts, candy and nuts. But at the end of the day, that's a 25 to 30-point win. And so it's a good lesson. Anytime you can win and learn, I think is very good. And we've got to learn quick because we've got a really, really good Belmont club coming in on Saturday at 2 p.m. before the men's game that evening. And Belmont, I think, has made the NCAA tournament like five out of the last 7 years. They were a OVC opponent of ours when I was at Murray. Their women's basketball team is very, very good. They transitioned to the Missouri Valley when Murray State did as well. And so I'm familiar with those programs. That'll be a great challenge for our women. And then our men play Montana State that evening as well, who's made, I think, three out of the last three NCAA tournaments. So it shapes up to be a really nice day of basketball for both our men's and women's program on Saturday.
Heck yeah. And for Shocker fans or just basketball fans, you might not know this yet, but Taylor Jamison has been leading the way for women's basketball. Of course, a Heights grad that is transferred back into Wichita State. So there's one more. And then Kevin, volleyball on a little bit of a heater here, won their last four matches and then right back in the mix here, just a game behind the conference leaders. We know that you guys will get to host the conference championship. I don't understand this stuff. I lean on you guys. Is it how many bids does the league, do you think, get? And is it a situation where Wichita State needs to win that? Can they get in without it? How does that look for volleyball?
I would need to look at today's RPI. I haven't looked at the RPI here in a week or so. But if you've got, you're going to get the one automatic qualifier. But if we've got one that's in the top 40 to 45 RPI, you can expect that we would be a two-bid league. You guys are aware we're hosting the conference championship because SMU won it last year, went to the ACC. So it shifts down to us. And I think, honestly, we've got an opportunity to beat anybody in the field in our home venue. So we're playing our best volleyball right now. We sit at 9-3 in the league, which is tied with East Carolina. And then you've got the other two clubs, Rice and South Florida, are sitting at 10-2. We still have an opportunity to play Rice at their place. And so that'll be a great opportunity. It is a well-seasoned, well-tested team. We played, I think, six ranked or receiving votes opponents. And their pins, as you mentioned, we're at Rice on Friday this week, and then at Tulane, and then at North Texas. So these next three road games will go a long way in determining where we are in our seeding for the conference tournament.
That conference tournament, November 22nd through 24th, volleyball fans, if you haven't checked it out, that'll be a really cool event to get all those teams in. Kevin, appreciate it again. Know you're under the weather. Let's get better and get our first home games in the books here. And hey, it's basketball season.
Sounds great. Jacob, I really appreciate the opportunity. And Paul, hope you're well. And we'll talk to you guys soon. Go Shockers.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it.
There goes Kevin Saul, Wichita State Athletic Director. a lot there, including, you know, what has been a big talker with the cheerleading squad. If you missed any of it, if you joined us late, you can always go back and listen to the entire interview on the Odyssey app. It's basketball season, Paul. Man, yeah,
we're there.
I'm fired up for it. I love it. I've been bullish on this Shocker team for a while. I know a lot of people have been, but there's a feel there that Shocker basketball could really create some more, you know, energy and start to get back to what, you know, what we're used to there. And certainly the opener was good. It'll be good to see him come back and play another quality game
Absolutely.
Here this weekend. Go back and listen on the Odyssey app. We're a little behind here, so we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. NFL trade deadline, including one not made for the Chiefs that they were apparently in on, one of the headlines of yesterday. We'll do that next on Sports Daily.
KFH.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Back-to-back interviews lets us catch our breath here a little bit. So the IHOP hotline is back open now at 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP, where you can celebrate the weekdays with new IHOP House faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. Glad to be here with you on a Wednesday, on a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday.
Yeah. Look at this right here.
I don't know if this shirt, I've used it before. I don't know if this one technically counts as Hawaiian. But I feel like it is, so I'm going to count it in. You know, it's a good day to celebrate being loud and, you know, obnoxious Hawaiian shirt wearing Americans. We just came out of an election day, which is always a patriotic day.
Well, that's the beautiful thing about Hawaiian Shirt Day here on KFA Sports Daily. That's the beautiful thing. You can call it whatever you want. Who are we to judge what somebody else calls a Hawaiian shirt? That's the beautiful thing about our movement.
It is. Everything goes. Everything counts.
Everything goes.
It was election day. It was K-State basketball night. It was also the NFL trade deadline, Paul.
Yep.
Yesterday, the Chiefs have been very active, and I would say so far, but, you know, on the returns that they've seen with, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, they didn't trade for him, but they added Kareem Hunt. They've been successful making moves this year. Mm-hmm. We'll see with some of the later moves that they were able to make. One that they didn't make that they were reportedly in on that's interesting, probably the biggest move of the day yesterday, was that the Commanders went in and traded for a corner, Marshon Lattimore, who's had just a ton of success in this league. And so the Commanders go and solve a need that a great need that they had, a bigger need than the Chiefs need it, and they need it because of injury. But Lattimore comes in there, and the reporting is, and I think it was The Athletic and probably others, basically saying the Chiefs were in on him. They were, you know, they're dumb, but they were in on Lattimore, and they didn't get him. So I think and. We saw that one, and then we also saw Tre'Davious White get traded to the Ravens, and he's not what he once was, but two high-profile corners, we'll call it. The Chiefs don't go make those moves. I thought it was interesting because you wonder if the Chiefs really wanted Lattimore, could they have done it? Now, he would have been a financial fit this year, Paul. He's not owed very much this year, but he would have become a financial burden over the next 2 years. Maybe it was simple as that. Maybe it was as simple as the Commanders were just willing to give more up to get him, but the Chiefs don't land him. So that secondary is what it is now.
Yeah.
You know, we've passed the trade deadline. I don't think you're going to go pick anybody up off the street that's going to make a major impact at that position on the football field. And we did see the Buccaneers kind of pass the ball effectively without their top two weapons. So I do think it's something to watch here down the stretch. I don't think it was so urgent that the Chiefs had to do something. I think there are other things that they can do to help that. Uche comes in, maybe helps the pass rush. You know, Paul, that helps the secondary a great deal.
Right.
But, you know, do you feel like it was a missed opportunity at all on a player like Lattimore?
Well, not really, because here's part of the problem. Right now, just a couple of days ago, I think it was Adam Schaffler who came up with the story. You know where everybody wants to go nowadays? All the players that are looking for a new home, you know where they want to go? They want to go to Washington. They want to be a part of that trend with Jalen Daniels. That's where they want to go. This is a team that right now is sort of the end deal. It's where you want to be. So I'm not surprised that this was a decision made by Marshawn Lattimore. I understand it is the soup du jour at this moment. But, you know, you go to the Chiefs and you have a chance to win a Super Bowl, be on an undefeated football team. But, of course, you get right down to it. And what I look at is right now, DeAndre Hopkins was the pick. This was the move for a football team that's competing for a Super Bowl championship. Boy, what a difference he made. By the way, you think they made the right decision after you watched that game the other night with the Bucs? I'm telling you right now, it looks like the guy's 22 years old and was just, he was phenomenal. Phenomenal. A difference maker. Isn't that what we've been looking for what, maybe a year or two? Maybe
it's
really,
it's interesting. Yeah. I can't believe how good he looked against the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
I was bullish on that move. I thought that move made sense. I think it was the right move. Man, he looked good.
Mm.
And he did. And Tommy and I talked about it. He added something for Mahomes that feels like a rejuvenation. And it's confidence, I think, as much as anything. I mean, Mahomes was firing just missiles in there, knowing that Hopkins is going to catch that ball. I think it adds something for the team they've sorely missed. And as we saw in the big play, the deep ball, he can go make that play too. Mm-hmm. That has been what they've missed a great, great deal. Mm-hmm. But yeah, look, he is going to be a major factor for them. And eventually they're going to get Juju Smith-Schuster back. They might get Hollywood Brown back. Who knows if they could get Rashee Rice back. That'll be a position of strength by the time the dust settles on this. Secondary probably won't be. You know, Trent McDuffie's great, and we'll see. Kind of like left tackle, it's going to be up to some young players to really step up and you know, finish the deal and get better by the time the Chiefs need them to get better. But I would say it amplifies the pressure on Uche, Paul, the pass rusher they added, to be able to generate a little more, you know, pressure to help those young corners over there get up to speed quickly and this not become a deficiency for the defense, which is, you know, we'll watch that closely over these next few weeks. They're going to get challenged by a few good passing attacks.
Right.
Won't be this week in Denver, but, you know, they'll play Buffalo coming up. They'll play Pittsburgh
coming
up. They'll get some challenges on teams that can throw it around a little
bit. Right. Spags is a smart guy. I mean, he knows what's what. You know, he'll be okay. Because what he'll do is he'll start tweaking some zone stuff. You know, if somebody needs some help or somebody needs to be covered up a little bit, you know, he'll tweak some zones and everything. I think everything will be just fine. I think this is still a really good football team. And with DeAndre Hopkins, by the way, did you notice how open the first 10 yards was available for Travis Kelce? I mean, it was almost like, you know, now that you've got a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, my goodness, the things just open up underneath DeAndre Hopkins. It's amazing. It's fun to watch. It's fun to see how that has evolved. And I think it was almost the addition of DeAndre Hopkins is almost like a new lease on life for Travis Kelce, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course it is.
I don't know how much I like him taking on 16 targets in a game, which I think was the number without having.
Well, that was a lot.
I think it was 16.
Only
because he's older.
Yeah.
I think though that Hopkins over time can relieve some of that, and I want to say when Juju comes back, he probably can too. Travis Kelce is capable and he's telling, because he appears to be, Paul, to me anyway, this year, and based on the things that he said in the offseason, he feels more in tune with paying attention to that than maybe in years past. Like, oh, I'm a little bit older. I got to be careful here. If he's telling the Chiefs and the coaches and Patrick Mahomes to pepper him with targets, I'm comfortable with trusting Travis Kelce on that.
Okay.
I do think, though, that they probably would prefer to, you know, to save him up a bit, you know, to let him kind of build up to the postseason. But look, if he wants to get out there and do it and it works and DeAndre Hopkins opens up that part of the offense, go for it. I mean, there's no question that was, to me, Paul, the most impressive offensive performance collectively they've had all year. I mean, the book on Tampa is you throw on them, right, and they've got a good run defense. Well, Kareem Hunt, He rushed for 100 yards. They ran it, I think, 27 times. Like, the Chiefs were able to take a balanced attack to a defense that is very one-sided and kind of impose their will. If Travis Kelce's a part of that and they're all comfortable with it, I guess I am too.
Well, that's a very good point. That's a lot of – because every time you make a catch, you're going to get hit. In fact, every time you're targeted, you're probably going to get it, whether you catch it or not. And that's a lot of wear and tear on a guy that just turned 35 years old in October. So that's a good point, Jacob. I like that point. So, you know, you've got to be careful how you use him. And at first I thought there was sort of like, well, maybe there was a little limit put on Travis Kelce. And we get into the second part of the season, maybe you start seeing that little element, you know, raise its head. I don't have a problem with that. It's probably smart. And then, you know, it's all.
Well, tell me this on a tight end, because I always wonder this. We look at 16 targets and we think, man, that's, you know, maybe he's taken a beating and, you know, all these things. But isn't a tight end kind of always taking a beating? Because when they're not catching passes, they're blocking. Right, well, and they're blocking it.
Now, he doesn't do that all the time because he lines up at so many places. And, of course, he's not that guy. He's not Blake Bell, who much of the time was lined up at a true tight end.
Right, but what I'm saying is, you know, he's taking a lot of contact as a receiver.
That's right.
But he's also taking a lot of contact when he's just blocking.
Earlier, that's right.
So how much are you really, like, is there much of a difference? You know, you've coached the position. Is there much of a difference as far as like trying to preserve the body and him blocking versus being a pass catcher?
Oh, there is definitely. And I'm glad you bring that up, because part of the situation with that would be simply this. How athletic are most defensive ends? How strong, how quick are most defensive ends? You know, they make their bones, you know, with rips and dips and, you know, all those kind of things, clubs and, you know, they're physical, aren't they? They're physical. For the most part, they're physical. They have to be physical to get around offensive linemen. If you're locked up and you're helping on pass protection or your run defense, you're going to be blocking these guys, particularly on the run. You know, you come off the ball. A lot of bad things happen in the trenches. It's not uncommon to see guys beat to the Dickens, you know, to death after a game, who have been playing in the trenches particularly. How would you like to be lined up against Chris Jones every game? I mean, he's going to beat the crap out of you. That's what he's going to do.
Yeah.
He's going to beat the crap out of you, because that's what they do. And the good ones do that. So you're right. There's a lot more wear and tear when you're inside the formation. When you're outside the formation, then it's not quite as bad. But every time you're targeted, somebody's going to hit you. Whether you catch it or not, somebody's going to hit you.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not worried about it yet. If that's the way they want to run the offense and Travis Kelce has a ton, good.
That's right.
Great. Who cares? Because if the offense looks like that, that's the best it's looked, and you just kind of trust them at that point.
Right.
But they don't make the move at the trade deadline. Marshawn Lattimore goes to the Commanders. We did see the Ravens at a corner. The Chiefs do not. So sort of like at left tackle, they've got what they've got. And look, they're 8-0. We all understand that. It's also a different sort of year, that it is all or nothing, right? It's all about that Super Bowl. So we look at these decisions under a bigger microscope than we probably normally would, but they're 8-0, and they look like the best team in football, and the offense is looking better than it has all year. We'll see if the defense can stay as, you know, dominant as they were early in the year as they get a little thinner. But they did add some reinforcements in the pass rush, and we'll watch all of those things, certainly. But that is the trade deadline. You know, I think, again, this, you know, happened before, but the Lions getting Za'Darius Smith feels probably the most impactful to a team that is contending for the Super Bowl. the Cowboys make a move that is... seems to be pretty terrible. I'll be quite honest as far as what the price that they paid. So it could be worse. You could be doing that and overpaying.
Yeah.
But we'll take a peek at some of the other moves made at the trade deadline when we return. And did it make anybody more of a contender? That's where we'll go next. It's all Brockton Savage. It's Sports Daily. Stay right here. We're coming right back.
And 1240
insider Shreya Slotta. If you missed anything from Wichita State Athletic Director Kevin Saul, who, yes, did get into the cheerleading situation with us. That escalated quickly. So you can go listen to the reasons behind the decision for some changes there to spirit at basketball games. That's all available on the Odyssey app, as is the Chiefs Kingdom show tonight at 6 o'clock, Paul. The Chris Kleiman Coaches Show at 7 o'clock. You can hear those, of course, here on KFH and find them on the Odyssey app as well. Busy night on the Odyssey app. All right. A little bit of rapid fire here. Trade deadline, Paul. The Bengals get a weapon if they end up becoming players again that will probably help them in Khalil Herbert. I told you that I think Za'Darius Smith coming over to the Lions probably is the most potentially impactful.
Could be.
Because, and he's not, you know, he's not what he once was necessarily, but he's got the ability to really help fill a hole for Aiden Hutchinson. So that one to me feels the most impactful of the moves that were made yesterday. We're talking about not necessarily, you know, I think there's absolutely a chance that DeAndre Hopkins is the most impactful. The Chargers add a wide receiver, KJ Osborne. Interesting. We mentioned that the Commanders added Marshawn Lattimore. If you believe in the Commanders, hey, 7-2, why not? That's an impactful move for sure. You saw that the Steelers added a wide receiver with some juice in Mike Williams. Wasn't working in New York there. I think that's a potentially impactful move if he gets healthy. Preston Smith, they also added a pass rusher. I'm telling you, Paul, I'm in on the Steelers. I'm in on what right. The Steelers are cooking here. I think they're real contenders in the AFC.
Well, I think you're probably right. And, of course, you know, you could always throw out a Devontae Adams to the Jets or I guess maybe Amari Cooper.
You got to expect them. Yeah, you got to expect Cooper to the Bills is impactful for sure.
Could be. Could be, yes.
Adams to the Jets, I think we're going to have to sit back and see if the Jets can do something special.
Right.
And I know they won their last game, and I thought they'd win their last game, and I actually had them winning that game against the Texans, but they got a long way to go. So now, let's see with them. Here's the one that has everybody laughing and me shaking my
okay,
head.
I was going to ask you about that one. I'll bet it's the Dallas Cowboys. Am I right?
So we're seeing like the compensation packages for Adams and for Cooper and for, you know, DeAndre Hopkins.
Okay. Yeah.
Here comes Jerry Jones, and you know, he's kind of just doubling down a little bit on, remember when they said they're going all in and then they didn't do anything to actually go all in.
Gotcha.
So then what they do is they go and trade a fourth round pick. And essentially what the Chiefs gave up to get DeAndre Hopkins in a best case scenario to go get, I don't know, the third or fourth best wide receiver on the worst team in football in Jonathan Mingo. He was a guy that was drafted early second round. But, you know, this year, you talk about making an impact, is his 12 catches on the year for 120 yards through eight games, Paul. That'll be the difference for the Cowboys. Jonathan Mingo will be the difference.
Yeah. Been in the league 2 years, I mean, no touchdowns. He hadn't scored a touchdown yet. How about that?
What are we doing here?
I have like, no
is
idea.
This,
no, I don't
is
know.
Is this satire? Like, that can't even be real. You see that, it was a headline. I was like, oh, Jonathan Mingo. I remember when he was drafted pretty high. He hadn't really done anything. It's like a fourth round pick?
Right. I don't even remember the last time I remember hearing his name mentioned, except from the draft. I don't even remember him being mentioned yet. And now today he is, obviously. And, of course, it's crazy because
I liked him as a prospect. And I don't think that
Okay.
Book is closed on him, but a fourth round pick?
Well, I hear you on that. I'd rather have my fourth round pick than that. That's for dang sure. But it's
interesting. That felt like a seventh round pick kind of trade.
Right.
Like a pick swap in the late rounds kind of trade.
Yeah, but you know what it says, though? It says that Jerry Jones is listening to the fans. I've got to do something. Right, wrong, indifferent, who cares, who knows? I've got to do something. It's almost like it's panicked. Does it almost seem like it's panicked to you? Because that's what it seems like to me. I got to do something now. I don't know.
Paul. Of course it's a panic move. It makes absolutely no sense.
Right.
It makes zero impact on this team, and it's an overpay. They should have been selling. The Cowboys suck, and Dak Prescott's out now for a while. Like, what are you doing buying at the deadline? What are you even my goodness, what a hot mess. What a hot mess. I'm glad it gave everybody else something to laugh at yesterday.
Well, it did.
Cowboys fans are just over here like, whatever, man. Doesn't surprise me at all that happens. All right. Busy show today. Go back and find anything you missed on the Odyssey app. We'll come right back. We'll tell you about the busy night here on the network when we return on Sports Daily.